I was living in Buffalo at the time, a small apartment with another grad student, Lucinda. She became my best friend. She was so vivacious and thriving in her role as a social worker. I really hadn't met someone with such a sincere heart. We had gone to a music festival in Boston in the May of 2019. Tame Impala, 21 Pilots. We had the time of our lives. And that's where she met Antonio. You could feel the energy between them. I truly believed her when she drunkenly told me that they were soulmates. Things were going great. Her career was really taking off, overseeing the new housing directive in downtown Buffalo, when COVID hit. She had just spent New Year's in Syracuse with Antonio, and they had already made plans to spend Valentine's Day together. We accommodated wearing masks, taking extra precautions when venturing out, wiping down groceries with Clorox wipes. Eventually, everything came to a grinding halt, and we began working from home. Through the bread-making and feng shuiing our apartment, she was FaceTiming Antonio. She started writing love letters when he pushed off her calls. He was busy, and I could sense her growing loneliness, and I felt bad for her. In the meantime, Antonio had moved back home to Syracuse to be with his family. The isolation and sheer instability of the time sent Lucinda into a spiral. Things weren't the same without being in person for her job, but it was unsafe for either side. She had to accept it, but she just couldn't. It was hard to watch her shrink into herself. I didn't know how to really help her. All I could do was just try to be there for her. Days passed, and I'd hardly seen her leave her room. I started to worry that she wasn't eating. I knew she had struggled with that in the past, and I wanted to make sure she was staying healthy. "Lucy," I'd said, having brought her her favorite chicken salad and offered to watch a rom-com with her in the living room. I heard her milling around in her room. I knocked again. She cracked her door, her eyes puffy from crying. She looked at the salad. That's okay, she half-heartedly smiled before shutting her door. Okay, I'll leave this for you in the fridge, I'd replied. The next morning passed, and she hadn't touched the salad. I marked the milk, counted the eggs, and took stock of the dried goods on the counter. I worked in the living room and would occasionally see her emerge to use the bathroom. By the next day, I grew concerned. Lucy? I knocked to no reply. I could hear her shuffling around in her room. I thought I could hear a whimper. Lucy, are you okay? I'd asked. I could hear slight moving in her room. The door was unlocked, and I edged the door open. She was sitting on the floor of her room, eating strips of paper. Her handwritten love letters laid strewn across her floor, torn to shreds. She turned to look at me while stuffing a crumpled wad of paper into her mouth. Why hasn't he replied? She sobbed. I called to get her help as I cradled her. She's doing better now that she got the help she needed. And she's home now with family. I just wish that I'd gotten her help sooner, when left to your own thoughts. With the overwhelming uncertainty of that time, it can really turn a person into someone unrecognizable. This takes place back when I was in my early 20s. I was in my hippie days, working on numerous organic farms, going wherever the wind took me. Around 22, I rolled into Eastern Connecticut, ending up on a farm with some new friends that I'd just met at a rainbow gathering. It started as a wild time, weekly if not nightly bonfires during the summer, with artisan-made wooden structures nearby like a large communal building with an outdoor kitchen, with an attached sauna, and a stone pool that stayed cool all summer long. Other rolling stones would gather, people from all walks of life. Together we'd form a small tent village, and then people would just ramble on to wherever else they were going. It was always busy, full of interesting people. It worked like a commune, people living that lifestyle. You kinda just know that it's expected that you do your part to contribute, share, and help the commune to flourish. I mean, you wanted to help, as a thank you for their hospitality. It was a lot of hard work. They grew their own food and had roaming livestock. We'd have to move the chicken coop every week for the chickens to pick at the bugs and fertilize the land. They also had a couple cows that we jokingly called Betsy of the Woods. We'd happily haul her into the woods, and you'd hear the jingle of the cowbell approaching, ready for her meals. We would just pull up a stool and milk her. It was a magical time for me, a time to heal, and to bring back that childlike wonder. Fall, and eventually winter came. I had decided to take them up on their invitation to stay for a while, at least through the next year. February 1st was quickly approaching, and the commune celebrated numerous pagan traditions. But this one was the most important to them. That's what Star had told me. She and I had become like sisters. I basically shadowed her in her day-to-day roles around the farm. By the end of January, the remaining people were the core family of the commune. Star had asked if I wanted to stay. She thought that I would benefit the community, with my experience in farming and all, along with being open to their metaphysical rituals. It felt like a good fit. I'd heard that Echo had owned the property since the early 60s, figured the name had passed down through the generations because she didn't look a day over 30. They all looked to be in their 20s. I figured it was a combination of holistic diet and meditation, with their evening sauna routine while passing around a glass jar of raw milk for all to partake. It was an interesting way of life, or so I thought. It wasn't until February 1st that they took me to the goat shack. It happened to be a full moon that night when Echo asked if I wanted to help her with the Imbolc ritual. Otherwise known as Brigid's Day, it marks the beginning of spring, a feast day, halfway between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. Echo had told me it was a rare event with the moon that night, perfect for harvesting. I was open to her rituals. I'd dabbled in Reiki, medicinal herbs, and stone energy. But this was apparently something different. The house smelled of rising dough, firewood, and sage that morning. Other members of the commune were busy working on finishing the decorations for the night, hanging garlands of braided vines dotted with white flowers, and pinning hand-woven Brigid knots to all of the entryways. Rose and smoky quartz stones lined the window ledge, having been cleansed in the sunlight. After helping stack wood for the bonfire, it was time for the ritual with Echo. It was approaching dusk as we donned the thick, plum-colored winter capes that were hung by the heavy wooden door of the communal house. She took me by the hand, and we started into the woods. Once we passed the initial tree line, Echo explained that she had been given that land, her family having owned it since the mid-1600s, when the colonies were first established. The ritual had been passed down from before Jamestown, going back to her Celtic heritage of Southeast Ireland. We approached a small wooden shack deep into the woods where I could hear muffled bleating. The chained door shook from being shoved from inside. The mood quickly changed to an almost ominous air. Was that blood in the doorway? She unlocked the chain, and the door swung open, revealing a bloated white goat. It stood in the far corner among the dry hay, eventually dropping to its hooves upon seeing us. The far wall shook from a tug on the goat's chain. Echo set the compost bucket down and pulled a small dagger from her cape. Star had already warned me of it being a blood ritual, that she had accepted the invitation when she was around my age. Echo held the leather sheath as she extended it towards me. I grabbed the carved horn handle and slid the curved blade from its holster. She instructed me to slice the palm of my right hand over the compost bucket before she slid the bucket to the goat, where it started to eat the slop. I was then to milk the goat. I hadn't noticed the coiled ivy vine at the bottom of the black bucket, but she said that it was part of the ritual, so I continued. The milk turned to a pastel pink, filling the bucket halfway, before she told me to stop. I stood, backing away from the goat as it kicked, the red and black sludge dripping from its sputtering and huffing mouth and nose. And those eyes, they haunted me. Upon returning, we were greeted by the glow and snaps of the giant bonfire, the pounding rhythm of drums, while some of the others moved in a seeming primal dance around the fire, adorned in their braided vine crowns. You could feel the wild energy in the air. Star was quick to offer me a jar of their potent homemade brew as she began to wrap my bleeding palm in herbal ointment. I watched as the others passed around the bucket of milk. Each one of them crouched, lapping handfuls of the pink milk into their mouths, before smearing the rest on their bodies. The last that I remember was them cracking open the top layer of ice in the stone pool. We each took turns submerging ourselves. Your body goes into shock upon dropping into the frigid water. You want to gasp from the razor cold. Scrambling out, you feel reborn as you run freely to the bonfire to find warmth. It was a dizzying moonlit night, and we were one with the heartbeat of Mother Nature. In the following days, I was practically bedridden, and all of us were covered in an itchy, blistering rash. Echo and Star comforted me, dressing my open sores with special-made ointment and bringing me fluids. I was so sick and exhausted from discomfort that all I could do was sleep. Days passed, and our rashes began to scab. By the end of the following week, we congregated in the sauna and gently helped each other peel off the scabs that were ready. I remember watching as Star slowly peeled a large chunk of a scab off of Echo's face, revealing vibrant, more youthful skin. Echo smiled as she brought her fingertips up to her cheek, feeling the plump, rejuvenated flesh. 2026 is the next full moon on February 1st. It's been 17 years since the last ritual. Things have changed around us, but the rest of the commune and I have hardly aged. And this time, it's my turn to find the next addition to our family ritual.